Nomen meum sempiternum, si hoc juvenem ad totem potentiam tolo, permanebit sed sicut Philippi Macedonis, solo in biographis eius qui post me regnabit. Epistolae Agrippae. Masonis, Book 4, Letter 3. The drizzly morning of the 24th saw me with my fellow servicers cleaning up what robots couldn't in a sewer rupture in Marseille. It was perfect work for us. Work no one wants to do, especially not on Renunciation Day. The kind of work which makes free people glad that we exist to do it in their stead. And we prefer it too, since the absence of our betters frees us to enjoy the company of equals. Does it surprise you that there is camaraderie among the servicers? Even pride? We are a strat of sorts, as united in our hearts as fishermen or Greeks or skiers are. We have ideas in common, experiences. We share stories in the dorms at night, folk music, tips about better patrons and bad, much as hobos and beggars did in bygone days, though you must not imagine any hidden beggar cities in the sewer tunnels, nor any beggar king. A man leapt from a car into the midst of the mess, seized me by the collar, and shook me so violently that my hat flew off into the muck. "How many times, Mycroft?" he shouted in my face. "I've been calling for 2 hours. You're not allowed to waste yourself like this." "Hey," one of my newer comrades, I am not permitted to include their names, shoved forward, fist raised in my defense. "What do you think you're doing?" Another servicer, who knew me better, held out a restraining arm. "Let it be." "But..." "The censor's in the right. Let it be." "The censor?" Perhaps you share this new servicer's shocked awe as she recognizes beneath a gray raincoat the porphyry blood-purple uniform of the Romanovan censor. If the Alliance has a face, it is censor Vivian Ancelet. Embarrassed now at being caught in an act so easy to misinterpret, but even in embarrassment he was intimidating, not with physicality, but with the weight of intellect behind it. The rain made the deep dye of his uniform almost scab black and brought out vividly the sparkle of its gold piping and of the Olympic stripes which rimmed his shoes, proclaiming his youthful medals in mathematics and debate. There is France in the censor's birthbash, in his vowels and his R's, and Africa in his face, his dreadlocks, and the darkness of his skin. But he wears no strat insignia, apart from the cuff pins of his math and puzzle clubs, investing all his pride in the grey law hiveless sash about his hips and the purple uniform across his shoulders. The office of censor is just as paradoxical in our age as it was in ancient Rome, neither executive nor lawmaker, commander nor judge, yet more potent than any in its own way. As master of the census, charged with tracking changes in membership and wealth, the censor judges when one of the seven hives should gain or lose a senator, and thereby holds the balance of the planet in his hands. Since he makes and unmakes lawmakers, we may call him a grandfather of laws. And, as the only life appointment in the Alliance, he is the only officer in Romanova that the media can turn into a prince. "You're alive today for a reason, Mycroft, and it isn't shoveling shit. Get in the car." "Yes, censor, just now." He seized me by the hair, and I could see from angry faces that some of my fellows read abuse in the gesture, but it was actually a tender grip, the roughness of familiarity, as when a mother lion lifts her cub in gentle razor jaws. "We have 5 hours to rerun the entire 710 list impact. Humanity needs that a lot more than they need 10 square feet of pavement anyone could clear." The truth stung. "Yes, censor, sorry." The censor's guards fanned out around us, and he gestured to one to retrieve my fallen hat. The rest, strong bodies in bold Alliance blue, pushed back my muck-stained comrades, while tiny, flitting robots scanned their faces, masks of wonder and concern. One face still showed anger. Just because you're the censor doesn't mean you can... It's all right. Again, the comrade, who had seen such scenes before, restrained my bold defender with a soft hand. The censor knows what they're doing. Mycroft's a little damaged in the head, and it takes some gentle roughness to get them re-anchored in the present sometimes. But it's not the censor's mind we have to change, it's Mycroft's. The censor, who through long acquaintance permits me to call him Vivian, smiled to find on hand another who understood the burden of putting up with me. Do not misapprehend, reader. All that is wrong in this scene is indeed my fault. Violence, abuse, even unfreedom, is abhorrent to our good censor, who keeps violence's great adversary, our patriarch Voltaire, forever with him, as a bust in his private office and a model in his heart. If you see violence here, it is not Vivian's violence. Rather, I infect those around me with a shadow of my own. I'm sorry. I let myself be hurried to the car, smiling reassurance at my fellows. I'll be fine. See you later, everyone. Make sure you don't miss the speeches. They won't, but we might, thanks to you. The censor released me to a guard who helped me strip off my muck smock. It's not just my time you wasted. I had to call around looking for you, interrupting I don't know how many meetings. I winced. I'm sorry you had to take the time to fetch me. I stepped up onto the first step of the waiting car and paused to let its hoses rinse the refuse from my feet. Have you heard what's happened? The Black Sakura 710 list manuscript was stolen, then recovered. Exactly. He made the car run its rinse cycle twice for him, to get the last muck off his cuffs. Now the seventh most popular list shoots up to number one in everyone's attention, and all our calculations go out the window. He turned to the system console. Romanova, censor's office. We started on our calculations, even as the car accelerated. Riding in one of Mukta's children, the hop from Marseille to Romanova is so brief that we did not even achieve full acceleration, and Vivian set the screens to window mode to let us savor the beauties of the capital with which, after 16 years in office, he is still so much in love. The colored banners of the day's festivities flooded the streets, lively but almost wrong, like paint caught in the cracks of an old statue, once colored but nobler in its naked white. The cheerful gold and blue of the Alliance flag were everywhere, but Renunciation Day also brought out hive pride, and the festoons and streamers color-coded the populations that clustered on our new Rome's artificial hills. Mitsubishi red, green, and white up on the Quirinal, Gordian red, black, and gold on the Celian, European blue and gold mingling with cousin white and azure in the valleys. Masonic gray and purple on the Esquiline, while across the Tibernove River, the bright Olympic rainbow made the humanist district even more exuberant. On such a day, one can really see that Romanova is Earth's most hive-mixed city, even more than Sydney or Hyderabad, since here the ratio of the seven hives is fixed, not only in the city's charter, but the alliances. When the death of Chairman Carlyle made it no longer possible to put off picking a world capital, three issues faced the committee. The design, the distribution of the real estate, which would soon be the most desirable on Earth, and who would pay. Spreading the cost equally would hit the poor hives hard, especially the cousins and Olympians, who then sheltered most of the Earth's surviving poor, but divvying by wealth would take the lion's share from tiny, patent-rich utopia, which could then reasonably demand the biggest slice of the land all powers coveted. The project languished 10 years in committee before the Masons made their offer. We shall shoulder the whole cost of building the city ourselves and divvy the property among the hives by population. All we ask is that you let us choose the city plan. All welcomed the end of deadlock, So, for a mere few hundred billion euros, the hive of myths and empires made the world capital be Rome. Has any government ever invested so wisely in propaganda? The six-hive transit system welcomes you to Roma Nova. The car's voice greeted us in its recorded ritual. Visitors are required to adhere to a minimum of gray hiveless law and to follow Romanovan's special regulations regarding concealed weapons, public gatherings, and graffiti. For a list of local regulations not included in your customary law code, select Law. To most, it is a formula familiar enough to bore, but it still lit the censor's face as brightly as a mother's welcome. Took you long enough? We were met at the steps of the censor's office by his barkid, apprentice and chief deputy, Jiang Su-hyun Ansele Kosala. Seeing Su-hyun now, his short black ponytail half fallen out, his gray and purple uniform veined with the wrinkles of a night spent sleeping at his desk, it felt even more surreal remembering his name on the stolen 710 list. It was true that this deputy censor walked the corridors of power in his master's wake, but it is as hard to imagine Su-hyun as a world-straddling titan as to imagine a snowy wading crane battling eagles. Su-hyun is absolutely tiny in that special way that only Asia's women can be tiny, as if childhood refused to leave and kept the frame so light you fear it might blow away like grass upon a breeze or snap like porcelain. Indeed, Su-hyun's delicacy makes it hard for me to stick to he, and there is just enough flesh on the bone beneath his tightly tailored uniform to confirm those are a woman's hips and chest. But he will be easier for you, reader, since that way, apprentice will match master. Su-hyun had a smile for Vivian, but a righteous frown for me. A second frown waited on the other face which welcomed us, the censor's most promising new analyst, Toshi Mitsubishi. She is another of the adopted brood of Chief Director Ando and Princess Danae. Africa and Europe are cofactors in her ancestry, visible in her rich, medium-brown skin and afro-textured hair, which she wears in a thousand little twists, like tongues of flame. But Japan dominates her syntax, her posture, her reflexive half-bow as we arrive, and she wears a Japanese nation-strat bracelet. The month before this, I had been honored with a slice of cake from the celebrations when Toshi passed her adulthood competency exam, and, at the time, I felt some smugness in having guessed correctly that, despite the honorable Mitsubishi surname, she would exchange her miner's sash for gray law hiveless. She could have worked for the censor even as a Mitsubishi member, but the gray sash is almost a uniform in the office, required by superstition more than rule, as if these public servants would somehow make the numbers lie if they chose to bind themselves to any other law. "Where on earth was Mycroft?" Toshi asked at once. "Halfway down a sewer." I apologized to Su-hyun with a wince, to Toshi with a bow. "How much have you done since I last called?" Vivian charged up the steps, already stripping the tracker from his ear as he passed the sanctum's bronze-faced gates. "A lot, actually. The last list just came in." Su-hyun followed the censor into the vestibule and tossed his tracker to the guards. "Excellent. We made some progress in the car as well." I held still as the censor deactivated and removed my tracker, while his guards confirmed permissions with the police. Tracker-free, and shedding even the censor's robot escort, we passed the inner doors together and let the censor's sanctum seal us in. Perhaps, reader, you have never been off the network for any length of time, except on portions of the long trip to the moon. There are now few places so secure that they forbid trackers. The unfamiliar cold of having nothing in that ear makes that inner chamber feel more special than other seats of government. As a buried temple, reached by slithering down the archaeologist's tunnel, feels more pregnant with the past than ruins which stand in sunlight. The extreme sensitivity of the sensor's data excuses the ritual, but it is still a ritual, no more nor less necessary than the bath one took before entering this building's predecessor in the real Rome.